Time for us to welcome into the program Chad Finn of the Boston Globe and Boston.com. That was Carrie's idea, by the way, Chad.
What the heck is that?
That's Weird Al doing the Hamilton polka.
I never heard the polka version before. I'm in.
It's, you know, slightly different than what you saw on Broadway.
Well, it's got a perm, for one thing.
There's that. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. What's going on? Y'all excited for some Southern Maine snow?
Yeah, nothing so far here. Just freezing cold. We had picked a perfect weekend to have our heater kick out in our house. So we got a new one today. It's nice and toasty, but good Lord. Sometimes we should just move to Florida with Brady.
Wow. So what did you do this weekend?
Got cold. fired up some space heaters, whatever we could think of. Sat in the car for a while. I got away from these people that live in this house and went out, drove around, went to Dunkin's, that sort of thing.
That's not so bad either in a pandemic. Take your breaks where you can here. Well, let's see what's going on. Let's start with the big news today here in New England. Not unexpected, but the retirement of Dustin Pedroia. And I said earlier, I think in this century, he's part of a triumvirate with Ortiz and maybe Jason Veritek as the most popular Red Sox players of the last couple of decades.
Oh, yeah, that's a good three, yeah, especially when you get into the later part of the great era the Red Sox had with the four World Series titles from 2004 to 2018. To me, you know, it's the team that's most overlooked of their championship teams, the 2007 team, but I think it might be the best one they had. It was the guys from 2004 were still here, you know, Pedro, Manny, Veritek, Schilling was still around, but you used Theo's player development machine was in full effect, and they had traded Hanley Ramirez to get Josh Beckett here. John Lester, Pedroia, Papelbon, Ellsbury all came up in that range, and it was Mike Lowell came over in that trade. It was probably the most complete team they've ever had, and the spark for that team was Pedroia as a rookie. He was just so he struggled so much in 2006. He hit 191 at the end of that season. He struggled at the beginning of 2007, and there was a little four-game stretch in April that year where he ripped off 9 hits in 4 games. And from that point on through the knee injury in 2017, he basically never stopped hitting. And, you know, people looked at him as kind of the embodiment of what they might be like if they had the skill and luck to me and ability and talent to make the major leagues, playing hard every day, giving your all, and just really caring about every pitch, every inning, every win, and taking every loss hard. And he was kind of the quintessential Red Sox player through the best time that any of us have ever had watching the Red Sox, the best era. So we know it was coming. Looked like it was probably going to happen pretty soon just because they needed to clear space on the 40-man roster, but it's still a sad day because that guy was one heck of a Red Sox player.
Boy, and you forget, I was going back and looking at the stats, you forget how young he was. He was only 24 when he won that MVP award.
Yeah, and you know, he got to the big leagues at 23 in 2006, and as soon as that switch flipped, in 2007, it was he was just an electrifying player. He won the MVP in 2008. It's a very short list of guys that won a Rookie of the Year and then the MVP the next year. It's names like Mays and Pujols and players like that. So he's in some pretty legendary company. And I tell you, in 5 years, it's going to open up some discussion on his qualifications for the Hall of Fame. I don't think he eventually gets in. Just because his career was too short, you know, 14 seasons, but three of those seasons were abbreviated, and one was that partial 2006 season. I don't think he quite lasted long enough, but he's got a real argument. He's the 51.6 career WAR and that MVP, that Rookie of the Year, significant part of 2 championship teams, and he got a ring in 18 as well. 4 Gold Gloves. And it's at a position that's underrepresented in the Hall of Fame. And some guys who may have had an argument for it aren't going to be on the ballot anymore. Robinson Cano has blown his chances of ever being a Hall of Famer. So I have a vote in 5 years. He's on the ballot in 5 years. And that's a name I think I'll probably write in out of respect for what he did for the Red Sox all these years.
Now, this year's edition of the Red Sox, on the positive side, I like the acquisition of Adam Ottavino, but the downside is it tells me the Yankees don't exactly view the Red Sox as a serious contender if they're willing to give up a guy with that level of talent, even to get a financial break.
Yeah, that didn't make sense to the Yankees, for the Yankees to me. They did it to clear a little bit of salary space and not go over the luxury tax. I think they were around $8 million away from going over, and they don't want to do that this year. But then they went out and signed Darren O'Day, who's been a really good relief pitcher in his career, but not a huge upgrade on Ottavino. And he's a little bit older, and he's a guy who's a little bit more unconventional, kind of submarine or sidewinder type of pitcher. I think I'd rather have Ottavino. And they gave the Red Sox a real pitching prospect in Frank Germán, who's somebody who was a fourth-round pick a couple of years ago and has a shot at a major league career. And they just did it for money, which is, I think, is something you should feel pretty good about with the Red Sox, that Bloom is willing to bring in talent and to make deals like this, not just when it's only money involved, but also to make these deals with the Yankees. It's kind of silly that the Red Sox and the Yankees don't deal with each other. I understand it because they're rivals, but if you think you're going to win a trade, make the trade, especially if it's against the Yankees. If you think you can make a deal with the Yankees that ends up looking bad for the Yankees down the road, make that deal. And I think it's a good sign for the way he's trying to rebuild the bones of this organization, that he's willing to be creative like this and to end up getting a good player and a decent prospect for just a little bit of money.
Well, by the time they're back to being contenders again, it may not be the Yankees they have to worry about. The Blue Jays are really stocking up here on talent and have rebuilt their minor league system already. They've got a great group of young players and now adding some big-timers with George Springer and Marcus Semien, and they just keep getting better and better.
Yeah, we all know Springer's a really good player, and he's one of those guys who always hit for the Astros, no matter how many people are banging the drums in the dugout or whether they weren't or anything. He was just a super productive guy who was at his best in the playoffs. And there was some thought, not recently, but probably a year ago, that he might be the guy the Red Sox were targeting to replace Mookie Betts. I don't think that would have been the wisest way to spend money. Just, he's 31, $150 million and a little bit of a history of hamstring injuries. I'm not sure that is the lowest risk move you could make. So we'll see how it works out for Toronto. I think the bigger issue for Toronto is getting back into their home country at some point. Not sure they're ever going to be allowed out of the United States again, but maybe once we're making progress with the vaccine and all of that, getting people vaccinated. But they were the Buffalo Blue Jays last year, and it looks like they're the Florida or something Blue Jays this year. So they should be really good, but they've got other dynamics to deal with too.
We're talking with Chad Finn here on Downtown. Boy, scary moment. It looks like it's going to be okay, but Marcus Smart had everybody holding their breath over the weekend.
Yeah, a couple of bullets dodged here. The Peyton Pritchard thing looked really bad when Dwight Howard shoved Jaylen Brown into his knee in the Sixers game, and then Smart going down like he had popped something, completely ruptured something. You start thinking Achilles or MCL or ACL, and calf strains are nothing to mess with. They tend to recur, but they can lead to further issues with your Achilles and with your feet, but the Celtics are saying 2 to 3 weeks, which is a sign that it's not that significant. It was probably pretty painful, but not that damaging. And Marcus says, I had a great year. He's much maligned for his shooting historically, but it's actually down quite a bit this year. He's only shooting 31% from three, and hasn't quite had the analytic impact that he usually does. But I think if you're a longtime Celtics fan, you know how to quantify what he means to the team. He's a guy who always plays hard. We talk about Dustin Pedroia leaving it out there all the time in his Red Sox career. It's the same way Marcus Smart plays, which is why he gets hurt so much. But the one thing that's really hurt this team the last couple of years in terms of achieving their goals are injuries. You know, Gordon Hayward being hurt and Kemba getting hurt last year. It would be nice to see one of these years what they can achieve with their full roster healthy.
I was excited when they picked up Jeff Teague. I thought that would be a good addition. What happened to him?
Yeah, it looks like his confidence is shot because he was playing well at the start. You know, he had those little floaters going in the lane and making good decisions with the ball. He's got the nice little hesitation game driving at the hoop, but he looks like the ball's on fire when he has it right now. I can't wait to get it out of his hands, and led to some turnovers, and his shooting's been off. But I still have some hope for that guy. The one who's been the disappointment to me is Thompson. He looks lethargic, and he was never the most athletic guy, but he was active. He was a great offensive rebounder. He's a pain in the neck for the Celtics when he was in those playoff series with Cleveland. But he kind of reminds me of Perk right now in his late Celtics career after the knee injury, where he's still out there banging around, but he's a step and a half slower than what he was at his prime. And hopefully they can get something out of him because they still have that need for a physical big that he's supposed to fill. Right now, though, it looks like they probably would have been better off dealing for Miles Turner.
Yeah, well, he's certainly not the guy to cover Joel Embiid. We saw that.
He was the Embiid stopper, supposedly. You know,
yeah.
He had pretty good success against him in Cleveland, but apparently Embiid got wind of that. And Embiid's in a little better shape this year, too. The thing with him was, you know, the play well, bidding in the games and run out of gas in the second half. And he's stepping on the accelerator from quarter one through four this year. And I think Thompson got in the way of that a little bit.
All right. Is it the second best thing to being in the Super Bowl, or is it just a sad reminder of what could have been to see Tom Brady back for a 10th trip to the big game?
Yeah, I've been so wishy-washy in that all year. For a long time, I kind of found it hard to root for him, and I think part of it was because of him having those workouts, maskless workouts, and he's kind of turned into this football Scientologist, it seemed like, sometimes, with the way he conducted himself personally. And I was really highly of him, and you know, covering the Patriots for a long time, especially back in the earlier part of around 2010, 2011, I was around a lot. He was great to people. He knew everybody's name. He was good to everybody, and I thought he was a really good guy. But he just seemed to do some things that made you question his common sense sometimes over the last couple of years. But I've kind of come around on rooting for him because I think Patriots fans need to remember, no matter what happens with him with the Buccaneers, if he wins this Super Bowl, if he wins next year, whatever it is, when his career is over, people are just going to talk about the 20 years of the Patriots. And they might say, oh, he won 7 Super Bowls, but they're going to remember the 6 of the Patriots and all the incredible things he achieved here. That will always be first and foremost. And, you know, he may be ending his career elsewhere, and it looks pretty good for him right now. But when it's all over, he's going to be associated with this team again.
What's the future for the broadcast team? Is this the last we see of Jim Nantz and Tony Romo together?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, Nantz wants a lot of money, and play-by-play guy is not going to get what a popular analyst gets, as you well know.
Yeah.
But he wants Romo money, and I think I can understand that because he was very instrumental in easing Romo into the booth and played a pretty important role in Romo making that transition from Cowboys quarterback to number one analyst and really popular figure immediately in the broadcast booth. But that's just not how it's going to work. And I got to say, you know, I've heard some people, connected people within the NFL say, no, Romo doesn't quite prepare like he used to, and especially once he got paid. And that's kind of rubbed Nantz the wrong way. So, I don't know. I don't know if there's a breakup coming there, but I do feel like I detect some tension sometimes when they're on the air, when they're talking over each other a little bit. And maybe I'm reading too much into it, but wouldn't be a shock either if Nantz packed up his master's bag and took off and went somewhere else.
I saw that CBS did re-sign Ian Eagle, and I think he's about as good as anybody out there.
That number two team was terrific. And I say that as somebody who dressed up as Dan Fouts for Halloween in fifth grade. I liked him on the broadcast. I was in a minority, and CBS dumped him after last season and brought Charles Davis over from Fox. Those guys did a really good job. They only had a couple Patriots games, but Eagle has a really good sense of humor. He calls a really, really good game. I've been warning him. I've had a couple Zoom calls with him, just talking to him before Patriots games and an NBA game this year. And I've been warning him Kyrie Irving's going to ruin the Nets, but he's not listening to me. But those guys have a really good rapport. And I give CBS a lot of credit for identifying Charles Davis as somebody that they wanted to hire and putting him with Eagle, because that pairing meshed really, really well.
You and I were chatting about this online. Ratings have been tough for WEEI, long kings of the Boston radio market, but they've struggled over the last few years, and maybe a shakeup or two coming.
You had Tangway on yet today?
You'll be coming on in just about 20 minutes.
Yeah, ask him whose job he's taken, because I'm trying to get to the bottom. He's been on the air a lot down here lately, and it's really well received. People like him in the Boston market. And when he got let go by NBC Sports Boston, people were really bummed out about it. The feedback on that, he was second among the layoffs in terms of distinct feedback to them letting Abby Chin go. And they brought Abby back this season for the Celtics broadcast. So Gary Stiller really well liked. And I think if he ended up with a bigger role at WEI, it would probably go over well with people. But, you know, it feels like the storm clouds are brewing for a pretty significant shake up there. And I think they're going to do a couple of things to their daytime programs. Not sure what. They're getting a lot of people looks on the weekend, but would not shock me at all if Gary's in that mix.
All right. Well, I'll be all over him. I'll grill him completely and get the dirt on this, get the complete lowdown. Chad, thank you.
Be a mole for me, will you? We're both from Maine. You think he can drop me a dime every once in a while, but he's a good company guy.
All right, I'll work on them. I'll do what I can do.
I appreciate it, Rick.
All right, thanks, Chad. Hey, enjoy the snow, and we'll check in with you soon.
Take care, yeah. I'm just glad to have heat.
Yes, stay warm. That's the big thing. Thanks, Chad.
Here.
Chad Fitt of the Boston Globe, boston.com, here on Downtown.